Welcome to Extreme Jeans on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Hola, Jeanies, and welcome to another edition of Extreme Jeans Family History Radio, America's family history show, where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth, fresh back after spending half of last week in San Antonio for the FGS conference, the Federation of Genealogical Societies. I stayed at a place called the Menger Hotel that first opened in 1859. It's got ghosts. I didn't see any, but it is right across the street from the Alamo. You ought to see it if you ever have the opportunity. Well, we've got some great guests today. First, our friend Janet Havorka from FamilyChartMasters.com. Janet has been digging into the effects of sharing family history with your kids. What does it do for them in their development? Well, there are amazing studies being done on this, and you'll want to hear what she has to say about it. Imagine the tales of your crazy Uncle Ralph. Could be making your kids smarter and better balanced. Who knew? That's in about 9 minutes. And then later in the show, we're going to talk to a dumpster diver named Sean Harvey. He's from the Cincinnati area and recently watched as something was being dumped, and he was infuriated when he discovered what it was. You'll want to hear about the lengths he went to get the piece back into the family to which it properly belonged. Then Tom Perry, our preservation authority from TMCPlace.com, returns talking about photograph scanning and the proper DPI. He'll also tell you about an astonishing new product for keeping track of your heirlooms and other household stuff that I think we've all been waiting for. You're going to want to hear that. Checking the results of our ExtremeJeans.com survey from last week. Did you know an ancestor who had false teeth? Yeah, false teeth are not nearly as common as they once were. 75% of you answered yes. You personally knew an ancestor with the fake choppers. Now, when I was four, my mom's father from Oregon came to visit us in Connecticut. And that was always an event because he lived so far away. He did this thing where he had me twist his left ear, and as I did, he would push on his false teeth with his tongue, and out they would come from his mouth. Well, of course, as a preschooler, I thought this was fantastic. And so when he came with my folks to pick me up from preschool one day, I invited my grandfather in front of all the teachers and my little friends to show everyone how his teeth would come out. I mean, who else in the world could do that? Mom and Gramps hushed me up pretty quick, and that was the end of that. Okay, this week, our survey at ExtremeJeans.com reads as follows. How far back does your earliest ancestral photo go by generation? Parent? Grandparent? Great-grandparent? Second great-grandparent? Third great-grandparent? Fourth great-grandparent? Or earlier? This will be an interesting one. Cast your vote now at ExtremeJeans.com. Okay, a couple of things about the show. Everyone in San Antonio went nuts for our free Extreme Jeans podcast app. If you have an iPhone or an Android, your app store has it. Just type in Extreme Jeans, press the download button, and it is yours. You can catch up on all of our previous shows with all kinds of information with terrific expert guests and great stories at the push of a button. If you have a great story of discovery or an ancestor you'd like to brag about, email me at fisher@extremejeans.com or call our toll-free find line at 1-234-56-GENES. That's 1-234-56-GENES, G-E-N-E-S. We would love to hear about it. And if you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear those, too. You can also like us on our Extreme Jeans Facebook page. It is time once again for your family histoire news from the pages of ExtremeJeans.com. Our first story has to do with weather. If you have early New England ancestry, as I do and many Americans do, you might not know, as I didn't, that on this past August 26th, it was the 379th anniversary of a hurricane that is thought to have been the largest ever to pound southern New England. It's referred to as the Great Colonial Hurricane of 1635. Yeah, based on accounts of Massachusetts written at the time, some 46 people died. The storm surge was in the area of 20 feet, and sustained winds were estimated at 135 miles an hour. This storm happened less than 15 years after the arrival of the Pilgrims at Plymouth. Their governor, William Bradford, wrote that the hurricane, quote, blew down sundry houses and uncovered others. Diverse vessels were lost at sea, and it made many of the Indians to climb into trees for their safety. By today's standards, the National Weather Service says the Great Colonial Hurricane of 1635 was a Category 3, much more powerful than the Great Hurricane of 1938, with a storm surge of 10 to 12 feet in Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. That storm, of course, killed many more people, over 600, as the New England states were much more populated than they had been in 1635. It is unbelievable to me that even with the small population of the time, only 46 folks lost their lives in 1635. And that's your family histoire news for this week. And coming up next, she is a well-known family history speaker and creates the most amazing family history charts. And recently, she's been delving into special research that is showing that family history for children actually increases their intelligence. You're going to want to hear more about this. It's coming up next with Janet Hovorka in 3 minutes on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com.
And welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. It's America's Family History Show. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth, with my good friend Janet Hovorka. She is back. And Janet and I just ran into each other in San Antonio at the FGS conference. And it was a great time, wasn't it, Janet?
We had a great time. San Antonio is a beautiful place.
It is great to have you back on the show. And I'm going to admit right now that I've pushed Janet just a little bit out of her comfort zone. Because Janet's working on this thing that, and I'm going to leave it to you to describe, Janet, but you're not ready yet. I mean, you're not done. But I think it is so cool and so important that you've found so much on this anyway that maybe we start introducing people to the concept and where you're going with this. And then when we get your final report, you know, we can go in that direction. So let's start out with this.
Okay.
And I like your comparison here with smoking, say, back in the 50s.
Yeah. So in the 50s, we knew smoking wasn't good for you, but we couldn't put your finger on it, right? Well, we've known for a long time that family history is good for you. Like, the beginning of my book, I talk about emotional healing and realizing your potential, finding a hero in your life. I talk about being enveloped in love and the strengthening of relationships that it comes from, and then the perspective that it gives you on life. Well, about 3 months after I published my book, there was some publicity on a psychology study that got me curious that was talking about the same kind of stuff but calling it different things. Instead of calling it perspective on life, it was calling it resilience that family history brings to children. And I can give you some more details on that, too. Or instead of enveloping them in love and building strength in relationships, it was calling it giving your family a common narrative. And what I'm finding is, and you're right, I'm in the middle of this, so you're going to have to stay tuned, but it's basically that the psychology community has been talking about this for a long, long time. They're just using different words than a lot of us are, and a lot of them are buried in scholarly studies and things like that. But they've known for a long time that family history is a key, important part of raising healthy children and being an emotionally healthy adult. And so, just like in the 50s, you knew smoking wasn't good for you, but you couldn't quite put your finger on it. But then in the 60s and 70s, you know, we found out that there's all these carcinogens and things like that, and it's come into our common culture now that there are fewer smokers and it's not healthy. I'm hoping that this is the start of really coming to know scientifically and into our cultural narrative that family history is really an important part of raising healthy children and being a good parent, but also being emotionally healthy yourself.
What I like about what you just said here was a new word that was kind of introduced, because we typically speak about it as providing a foundation, and I think it's more philosophical as most family historians like to look at it, because we see these effects all the time as we share things with children. But you use the word resilience, and resilience indicates to me strength. And that's something that maybe we don't observe so much, but science is now beginning to prove. That's exciting.
Yes, and these are psychology studies with children and adolescents, and they've done blind studies and all sorts of things to study what family history does for youth or for adults. And it really is, as my friend Amy Coffin says, she said, boom goes the science. You know, we've known this, but now I'm finally kind of uncovering the science to this. You know, we've known for 15 years that family dinners are important, and the psychology world has known that when you go to therapy, sometimes it's about your parents and even your grandparents, but we haven't quite put our finger on what it is. And what I'm starting to find is that it's this intergenerational transmission. It's this way that we pass things down, and understanding it and knowing about your family history is a cleaner and more emotionally healthy way to pass things down. So yeah, resilience is a big one. And if you think about it, it really isn't rocket science. Resilience is something that happens at the dinner table when mom or grandma says, oh, you can deal with your piano lessons. Your uncle had to deal with that too. And then pass me the peace. You know, just move on with life. Your family has dealt with it, and so you can deal with it too.
Now, you mentioned I was at one of the talks that you gave not too long ago at a family history conference, and you talked about a challenge in your life that came along, and you were helped out by something that happened to you way back, what, in the Depression or something like that. Can you review that with us?
Yeah. I talk about that in my book as well. And again, I knew what it was, but I just didn't have scientific backing to it. The experience that happened to me was I went through a really harsh divorce at a very young age, and it kind of blew my world apart. I had a really pristine childhood, got married, and thought everything was perfect, and I was going to be with this person forever. And within about a year, year and a half, that all dissolved. And it blew my world apart. I couldn't understand what was happening, and I had a lot of emotional issues from that. And at that same time, I was given a history of my great-grandmother. It was just 20 pages or so that she had written, and she had lost her husband at a similar age. She had two children at the time, and her husband had died from an appendicitis attack while he was on a business trip. And she talked about how lonely it was, and she talked about a lot of the same issues that I was dealing with. But I knew her at the time. She was over 80, 82 or so, and I knew who she'd grown up to be, and I knew that things were going to be okay. And that gave me that push to say, I can do this too. It's in my DNA. You know, you find a family hero, and every family has them, no matter how dysfunctional. Somebody, somewhere, there's a hero. If not, keep looking. You know, there's a hero in there. This great-grandmother kind of became a hero to me, that she survived that and moved through and done other things. And I knew that I could be okay too. And it gave me resilience.
It gave you the resilience, right?
It gave me that perspective on life, that the current crisis isn't the only important part, that you have resilience because other people have gone before you and made it through as well. And if you could give something to a teenager, by definition, a teenager needs that perspective and that resilience.
You think about a kid who's a teenager, and where were any of us when we were in our teens? You know, we're trying to find our way in a social world. We're thinking about, oh, where am I going to go to college? What am I going to do for a career? I mean, our time frame and our time experience is so limited. But of course, how do we know that? We haven't lived any longer than that. So in essence, by going back, I guess, and gathering all this material, or at least having it shared with us at that age, it makes sense to me that our roots get dug deeper and somehow we gain more life experience through the life experience of those who came before us.
Absolutely. Emory University, I think we talked about this a little bit last time I was on your show. The psychology department at Emory University, Marshall Duke and Robin Fabush have been studying this with adolescents. They've been studying what they know of their family history. They've developed a 20-question test to kind of test children about their family history. And then they've gone through and tested those children with other psychological tests and have found that adolescents who know more about their family history and have a better sense of what they call the intergenerational self do better in therapy. They do better with tragedy. They have more self-understanding, and they're able to deal with the big struggles of life. But then I found another study I got to tell you about that was in the European Journal of Social Psychology. And this study actually tests family history and thinking about family history versus intelligence.
Wow.
Intelligence tests. You actually score higher on intelligence tests. And they did four studies. The first one is that they had people think about their deep roots, like the 15th century, like their ancestors in the 15th century. They had a second group thinking about great-grandparents. And then a third group, the control group, just thought about their last shopping trip. And the people who had been thinking about their ancestors scored higher on intelligence tests. The second one, they had them construct a family tree for a few minutes, and then the control group thought about a shopping experience. Again, the people who were contemplating their ancestry did better on intelligence tests. The third one, the first group spent some time thinking about family members, and the second group spent some time thinking about good friends. The people who had been thinking about family members scored higher on intelligence tests. And then the fourth one, and this is the most interesting one, they called the likability test, and that was they had a group thinking about the positive aspects of their ancestors. They had another group thinking about negative aspects of their ancestors, and then a third control group. And the two groups who were thinking about their ancestors, even the negative ones, scored higher on intelligence tests.
Isn't that interesting? Because you would think that the negative ones might have a bad influence on kids or something because they think they come from bad roots or something. But, you know, obviously, as you've mentioned before, we all come from scoundrels and heroes, and there's a little scoundrel in our heroes and a little hero in our scoundrels.
Well, you can learn just as much about decisions and consequences of life, and you can learn just as much from those scoundrels as you can from the heroes. And like we said, there's some of all of that in everybody, too. That's one of the beauties of family history, too, is it teaches you to be more generous to everyone, because you can see that over the span of a life, people make mistakes and people do better, and they struggle, all people struggle against what they're given in life. And it just makes you a more generous person, too, I think.
Well, you know, it's a fascinating study, and I'm glad you're pursuing this, and you're going to be doing lectures on it and a book, I would assume.
I am. I've got a lecture for Roots Tech in February, and then I'll be publishing stuff on my blog, the Zap the Grandma Gap blog. I'll be publishing things there that I'm finding out, and yeah, I may have to write another book about this because it's really fascinating stuff about what we know that knowing about your family history can do for you emotionally. It's just emotionally healthy.
Emotionally and in intelligence.
And in intelligence, and probably I expect to find more, too.
She's Janet Hrvorka from FamilyChartMasters.com. Janet, always great to have you on the show. Fascinating stuff you're learning there and sharing with us. And thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
And coming up next, he's a guy who never served in the military but has an enormous respect for the military. And he recently made a discovery that made a family whole. You're going to want to hear this hero's story. Coming up next in 3 minutes on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. And welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio, America's Family History Show. It is Fisher here, and I'm excited to have this guy on the line, Sean Harvey from the Cincinnati area. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you all?
We are doing great, and so glad to have you on because you're a hero to me. I mean, I'm always searching the internet to try to find interesting stories to share on the show, and yours just really caught me immediately. It's like, I got to talk to this guy. Let's just set this up a little bit. You were you working? Where were you when you had this experience?
I'm currently unemployed, so I do flea marketing, and I do picking, dumpster diving.
Dumpster diving. Absolutely. Yeah. It's fun.
Something I can sell or something I can scrap.
Okay. And what's some of the best stuff, by the way, over the years that you've found doing that?
Well, I find some older suitcases, which they sell. I just, you know, I can find all kinds of things in there.
And so you're eyeing this dumpster this one day, not far from your home. And what do you see?
It was actually a dumpster that was in my storage unit.
Okay.
And as I drove out to get some gas for the truck, get me something to drink, I noticed this guy unloading his storage unit. And when I came back through, he was gone. I looked in the dumpster, and I found pretty much new stuff. I pulled out this rubber tote, and on the top of it, there was this binder that had a tribute to fallen officers. Most of us from Cincinnati. I took that down to the Amelia Police Station. They turned it over to Cincinnati Police. But below it was this gentleman's plaque of ribbons, medal. It had his dog tag in it.
World War II era ribbons and medals in a dumpster. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I just couldn't let that go. I started fuming.
Well, now this was kept in a, was it framed? How was it presented?
Yeah, it was in a frame.
Okay.
It was done neat.
And how large was it?
Every bit of 10 by 12.
So it's a good size. And how many medals and ribbons were in there?
See, there's a marksman medal, a sharpshooter's medal, four ribbons, his dog tag, a patch of the tiger's uniform, plus there's a picture of him and his wife that were in it.
It makes you wonder how it ever left the family, doesn't it?
Well, from what I heard, the one grandson, he got all bent out of shape at the family anyway. He took it. He stole it from his uncle or his dad.
And then he sold it, or was it the guy you actually saw, do you think?
It was the guy that I actually saw. He was a relative.
Wow.
Because I pointed him out in one picture.
No kidding.
There was a family photo, and I pointed him out, and they said, yeah, that's the one that's... He's estranged from the family.
Well, let's go forward, Sean. You found this stuff in the dumpster, and you're fuming mad. And now what did you do next? Because obviously you don't know who these people are.
I took it to the administration over here in Batavia, Ohio, and they ran his name. They said they couldn't find it. And I asked them if they wanted it. They said no, they couldn't do that because it'd be a conflict of interest because he's a veteran. So they gave me the number of the reporter, Cliff Rattle of the Cincinnati Inquirer. He's the one that went and did all the legwork. He called me up, and he wanted to know about the whole story, and he actually did the get-together.
So he got you back together with the family.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about that experience. Did you keep it until you presented it to them, or was it in somebody else's hands and you were just present? How'd that work?
I gave it to Mr. Rattle so he could get the information off the dog tag and some other things, and he did that part, and then he gave it back to me, and then I presented it to them at the reunion.
So it was a family reunion put together just for this, I assume?
Yes.
So what was that like? What were the feelings like? What was said?
It was highly emotional. I usually don't, you know, get worked about things like that, but just to see their faces, it was just outstanding. I mean, it was just truly emotional. I can't really put into words.
Well, I can see it kind of chokes you up right now thinking about it.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because that meant so much to them. And just giving it back to them, knowing that they had it. The son had one of his dog tags. And like I said, in this shadow box was the other dog tag. And, of course, a picture of his mom and dad. And, you know, just to, you know that they got that back was something that...
It was rewarding for you.
Yes, it was. And they're really easygoing people. To treat somebody's medals like that, throw it in a dumpster, that's just totally wrong. If you don't want it, take it to your nearest VFW hall or American Legion post and treat it with respect.
Are you a veteran, Sean?
No. I've done mechanics and sales for most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I regret not signing up.
Back in the day. So you have great admiration, obviously, for these veterans.
Yes, I do. My dad's a veteran. My great uncles were veterans. My one great uncle, he served on a couple battleships during World War II that somehow he survived, but both of them got sunk. I don't want to say the one was Louisiana. My brother served in the Air Force during the last part of the Vietnam conflict. Half the kids that are out here today, they don't know what these guys went through.
Mm-hmm. So
this guy was in the Battle of the Bulge, and their casualty rate was about 80%.
Are you guys in touch now? Are you staying? You must be part of their family as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, I'm staying in touch with them.
Sean, you're a hero. In absolutely your own way. Oh, you are. To take the effort to go and do that. I mean, there are many things that are found that affect a lot of families that people just toss aside or never make an effort to reach out and get those back into the hands they belong. And I'm so glad you did this.
The way I look at it is what may not mean nothing to you means a lot to somebody else.
That's right. And here you are, a guy who's trying to make a living by finding a few things. You could have sold that, I would assume.
Well, yeah, I did have an offer on it. Somebody saw it in my truck when I was at the flea market, and he wanted it. And he offered me $20 for it. And I said, no, I just brought it up here to show the other people what some idiot did. And they was kind of, because a couple of them that set up with me are veterans. And they just told me I was doing the right thing.
Right. Well, I'm sure the Reese family will love you forever for what you've done. Sean Harvey from Cincinnati, thank you so much for your time. And thanks for doing what you did. I think it inspires a lot of other people to do the right thing.
All I can say is shake a hand of a veteran, thank them for serving, just respect them.
Thank you so much, Sean.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on.
And coming up next, our preservation authority, Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. He's got some great advice for you when it comes to scanning your photographs. What's the best DPI? And he's also got a great invention he just found out about. You're going to want to hear about it later on in the show. It's all coming up in 3 minutes on Extreme Jeans, Family History Radio, and ExtremeJeans.com. You have found us, America's Family History Show, Extreme Jeans, Family History Radio. It is Fisher here, the Radio Root Sleuth, with Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. He is our preservation authority. Tom, you're on the road. How are things?
Awesome. I just love being on the road, crossing the country, helping people preserve their memories. That's what it's all about.
Well, and you know, that's kind of the theme we're hearing today, like our guest Sean here a little bit ago, who rescued those medals from a dumpster and got them back to the family that they belong to.
Sean is truly a hero. I mean, what he did was incredible. You know, we have people come in our store all the time that talk about, oh, hey, I've got all these photos. I have no idea who they are. I'm just going to throw them away. I don't want to transfer. I go, no. Give them to me. Let me scan them, put them up on the web, and let's find out who these people are. And then a tragedy a customer told us about is he was living out west, and his mother and sister were living back east, and she passed away. And he was right in the middle of a deal and couldn't get back for several days. And by the time he had gotten back, his sister had thrown away his mother's entire filing cabinet of family history documents.
Oh, no. Did she know what she was doing?
According to him, she kind of did. There's been kind of a little rift between them, and the daughter always felt like the mother was spending too much time on family history, and I think there's a little bit of vengeance in it, which makes it even sadder.
Oh, and so he couldn't rescue this stuff. It was gone.
Nope. It was put in one of those giant dumpsters. The big dump truck picked it up, hauled it off, sent it to the farm where old things go to die. And it's just totally unfortunate. I mean, years and years and years of research, family history, totally gone just because somebody wanted to be an idiot, I guess.
Oh, well, sounds like vengeance to me. Well, let's talk about photographs a little bit here. It's been a while since we've been on that topic. And I was just down in San Antonio at the Federation of Genealogical Societies convention. And I picked up a book that I was very excited about. It was about identifying old photographs based on the fashion styles of the times. And they showed them in 5-year periods, the collar sizes, single-breasted, double-breasted jackets, hairstyles for the women. And so that it was fascinating stuff. And it made me think about some of the things that you talk about in preserving old photos. And it's very important that we do it in the right way, especially when it comes to digitizing them.
Oh, absolutely. It's very important to digitize in the right way. And like you mentioned, it's great to have some kind of a date. Because sometimes you find an old box of photos and you're thinking, are these in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s? And a great book like you mentioned will help people kind of look at them and kind of discern, oh, you know, based on the size of this collar, based on how they have their hair, you know, is this age of a kid? And we've talked about before, young babies usually always wore dresses, whether they were boys or girls, and you had to look at the part in their hair to tell whether they were a boy or a girl. So all those things will help you in dating your things and finding out, is that Aunt Ethel or is that Uncle Fred as a baby?
That's a good point, yes. And by the way, the part on the side is how you know if it's a boy. The part down the middle is how you know it's a girl.
Yeah, something that simple is so valuable when you're trying to figure out who these people are, when they came, and stuff like that. So a book like that's invaluable to have with that internet research. It makes it awesome. But photos are so important to preserve. Don't go waiting off to do them. Do them as soon as you can because the dyes do go away. They fade, especially if they're around warm areas, if there's sunlight on them. We've had people that have had these family portraits for, you know, 30, 40 years hanging up in their dining room, and unfortunately there's a window across from it, and they start turning usually red. And what it's doing is killing off the blue dye that's in the photo. But if you grab it soon enough, you can bring it into us or any photo restorer across the country can really restore those pictures and make them look just like brand new. But you don't want to wait too long till all the detail's done.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. What about digitizing at home?
Oh, absolutely. See, a lot of people think you always have to go to a professional to do it. You can buy decent scanning equipment. You just want to be really, really careful what you get. It depends on what size you're scanning. Like, people always call me and say, what DPI should I do that? Well, it kind of depends what size your original is and what size you want to be at. For instance, if you have something like a 2x3 and all you want to print is a 2x3, you can scan it at 300 DPI and it's fine. Whereas if you have a 2x3 and want to print it as an 18x24, you want to go a little bit bigger. So it just kind of depends what you have, what you want to do with it. If you have postage size photos, like a lot of the old genealogy pages and family history pages of old, they were almost the size of a postage stamp because that's just a format they used. So you want to make sure you scan those at a super, super high DPI in case somebody wants to make a 3x5 or a 5x7 of them. So you need to be really, really careful that you watch your DPI.
Now, is there a standard that people can just say, you know, if I generally go at this DPI, we're going to be safe?
Oh, yeah. Most people, if you want to do, you know, as high as like 4,800 DPI, I mean, you can do anything. You can take a 2x3 picture and print it out as a 20x30, and a 4,800 DPI will be fine. So just kind of be careful with your DPI and also with your megapixels, because those are the things that are really important. And like we talked about before, don't do overkill. Like people say, oh, I want everything scanned in a TIFF. I've got these 5,000 photos. Well, yeah, you can do that, but as far as I'm concerned, and I own the equipment, I don't do all my stuff in TIFFs. I do the majority of them in JPEG. And then we hear the people, well, JPEGs deteriorate. Well, yeah, if you make a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, that's going to happen. But that's why we tell customers when they come into our store, we make them a disc that says master on it, and then all their duplicates say duplicate. So we tell them, hey, if you run out of dupes and need to make another dupe, go back to your master and make your dupes from that, and you'll never have a problem with JPEG deteriorating.
We have Tom Perry on the line. He's on the road this week. He is our preservation authority from TMCPlace.com. You're just telling me off air, Tom, about some amazing discovery you just found that everybody's going to want to hear about.
Oh, this thing is just like so groundbreaking. It's amazing. The company is called Estimote, which is E-S-T-I-M-O-T-E, so you can just go Google it. And they have introduced a line of wireless sensors that look like stickers that can be attached to household products, allowing homeowners to keep track of those objects with a smartphone application.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, I mean, it's so cool. I mean, I would just absolutely love this to organize myself. How it works is these Estimote stickers contain what's called an ARM-based processor with flash memory built right into the sticker. So a Bluetooth smart controller, along with sensors, will be able to find things. Also, they have ones with temperature sensors. So if your old movies are getting too hot in the closet or something, say, hey, you know, these things are getting hot. It'll send you a warning. You need to move them. And it's amazing.
It is.
Like my dad had like 20 photo albums, and it's like, what photo album is what? Where are they? Are they in the kitchen? Are they in the attic? With this smartphone with Bluetooth, you'll be able to find out where they are. You'll be able to identify what they are, almost like a library. Now, I'm not sure how far it works. This is like, you know, breaking news type thing. I'm going to follow up on it, and then next week I'll bring in some more information about it. But these are smartphone-based. They've got the information on them, so it just depends how far your signal goes and how strong that they are.
All right. It's Estimote is the company. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Estimote.
Wow. We're going to have to look into that more. That is amazing. All right. We were talking about photographs here in the previous segment, and I don't think you got through everything you wanted to talk about with that.
Oh, no. The biggest thing we were kind of talking about was DPI. We kind of went off on another tangent. But let me just give you a few examples of how you want to scan. Like we talked about 300 DPI, we talked about 4,800 DPI. 4,800 DPI is your dump truck, and the 300 DPI is your Yugo. But if a Yugo gets you from A to B, then that's fine. Go with it. So you want to look at what size your master is, your photo, and then what size you want it to be when you're scanning. Like I say, I recommend JPEGs. If you have a few to do, either come to a place like us, we're happy to do them for you. You can rent scanners. Some of the guests that we've had on here before, Easy Photo Scan, you can rent really super high-end, you know, $5,000 scanners for a week for a few hundred dollars for a family reunion, which is a great way to go. But so basically some normal things, like say you have a 2x3. If you're going to want to go 5x7, you want to go at least 1,200 DPI. If you're going to an 11x14, you want to go to about 2,400 DPI. If you have little like 4x6s, the 1,200 DPI kicks in at about 11x14. If you go to a 5x7, you want to go at 1,200 DPI once you hit a 16x20. If you have a master photograph, which a lot of people have the old 8x10s, if you want to just keep it an 8x10, 300 DPI is fine. You don't need to go any bigger.
Really?
If you want to go, yeah, it's fine. If you want to go to 18x24, then you want to go to 1,200 DPI. But my rule of thumb is I look at what a chart says, what they recommend, and then I go one higher. That way I'm safe without bringing in a dump truck, so to speak.
Exactly. Now, I know there are a lot of people who are listening either in their cars or at home and going, Tom, you're going way too fast. I can't keep track of this. Do you have this available for them somewhere to look up those kinds of numbers?
Yeah, I'll try to get on the internet, but they can also contact me at asktom@emcplace.com. Say, hey, can you send me a copy of that DPI listing? And I'm more than happy to forward it to anybody until I actually get it up on the website.
All right, that's great. And, of course, the website is tmcplace.com. All right, always great stuff, Tom. Thanks so much for joining us. And have a safe trip on the road. We look forward to having you back in studio next week.
Sounds good. I'll be there next week with whistles and bells.
All right. All right. And thanks once again to Janet Hovorka from FamilyChartMasters.com for her insight on the new research in the family history and how it's affecting the intelligence of our kids. And to Sean Harvey of Cincinnati, who rescued a whole bunch of ribbons and medals from a World War II vet out of a dumpster. If you didn't catch it, of course, listen to the podcast. You can find it on iHeartRadio's Talk Channel and on iTunes starting Monday of every week. Talk to you next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.
This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org.